No risk it, no biscuit.
Arizona Cardinals fans, do you see red? Are you part of the Red Sea? Then you are listening to the show for you, a podcast for Cardinals fans, by Cardinals fans, with outsider and insider perspectives. It's time to rise up and see red. Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up, See Red podcast. Episode 169, after the Cardinals are now 2-2, they pick up a division win. 18-15 in overtime over the San Francisco 49ers. And that's what we're going to talk about on this edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, USA Today's NFL Wire site covering the Arizona Cardinals. With me is my co-host, Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, also from SB Nation, the Arizona Cardinals site for SB Nation, Revenge of the Birds. And he also the host of the NFL Draft Breakdown podcast. Seth, Cardinals are 2-2. It's not a repeat of last year, so we've got that at least. They're not impressive, but they're not done.
No, they're not done, and, you know, hanging on by a thread at this point. And that's all you could ask for. We didn't get the second-half performance that maybe the Seattle fans got from that football team, but...
Oh, my gosh. I didn't watch the second half. I left the stadium to come home. And, you know, Indy was winning. And I'm like, oh, wow, this is happening. And then I drove home, did a couple other things. And then I looked at the next day and I looked at the score. I'm like, what happened? 46-18? What in the world? I'm like, oh, see, I think Seattle got better. So we talked about last week this game wasn't going to be a get well game, but it would be a get better game. I'm not even sure that was quite it. And after the win, I was saying it wasn't quite that win saved the season. It salvaged the early part of the season, because if they'd would we not have been eulogizing the season already at 1-3?
I think you would have had to, especially the thing about that game was, I don't know whether to take away if the Cardinals have a good defense or Brian Hoyer is just that atrocious of quarterback.
Did you see that one deep throw that he threw? And it was right at Kyle Shanahan. He caught it and spiked it. Shanahan was so unhappy with that throw. It was comically good. But exactly. Anyway, so this episode, Seth and I we're going to talk about what we liked and what we didn't like in the win. We're going to talk about as well. We're going to play the game. I believe that fill in the blank about different topics and different players. And then we'll get into their next game where they are on the road, East Coast, early time slot against the Philadelphia Eagles, a place where, you know, aside from the 2015 win, they haven't had a lot of success against a team with a young quarterback, with a good pass rush. It's playing well as well. So let's go ahead and get started with the San Francisco game. Let's start off with what we like. Seth, what did you like in that game?
I think the first thing you like is the resiliency of Carson Palmer. I've been, you know, somebody that has said numerous times that Carson Palmer is not a quarterback that you are going to win the Super Bowl because of, but he's a good enough quarterback that you can win the Super Bowl with him. And this year, he's been the quarterback that the Cardinals need. He's been the quarterback that not only kept them in games, but against Indy and against San Francisco, he's made throws in key situations where he just, you know, he hadn't in the past. And now all of a sudden you watch him and you see him, and there seems to be, and maybe it's just all of the hits he's taken, but there seems to be a calmness about him in those clutch moments. And he's just the fact that he gets up after every hit and keeps going for more. It's just been great to watch. And it's unfortunate that, you know, he might get Kurt Warner'd, and that's kind of where you feel like this is headed, in that he's just gonna be like, nope, I'm done. But man, has he played well for them this year.
And what I've liked about Palmer's play is the fact that what have we always seen, even the first 2 weeks of the season, what have we seen from a Carson Palmer that is under pressure, under duress, who's getting hit a lot? We see an erratic Carson Palmer. To go back to 2013, he'd make interesting throws, and we saw it. We've seen it almost every single season, but it was almost as if, like in the second half of the Indianapolis game, things started clicking for him, and his poise, despite the hits, has remained. And now getting sacked six times in each of the last two games, he's put up very good numbers with overall very good decision-making. I didn't think we were going to be able, you know, I said when David Johnson went down that we didn't need Carson Palmer to be what he's being right now, but we're getting it. I thought all we needed was the more of a caretaker Carson Palmer that we saw in the early 2014 before he went down with his injury. He wasn't putting up huge numbers. He was being smart with the football, effective, and it looks like we've gotten, you know, aside from the he's not getting the touchdowns yet, but we're getting kind of a Superman Carson Palmer, which is, I mean, more than we thought they were going to get.
Yeah, and so I think that's the biggest thing you take away is that, you know, Palmer is who he is at this point, but he's redefined himself and redefined the fact that he can be a guy that makes clutch throws in big situations. And he's also a guy that can shake off getting bloodied every game and stand in the pocket and make those throws. And you know, he hadn't been that guy often in his career, like we just talked about. And so to see him do that now has been fantastic. And the other thing I liked about this game is as poor as the offensive line was, I thought Jared Valdir did a nice job. We've really gone hard after his first 3 weeks. And so to see him have his best game at right tackle, I think that was important. I don't know if that is a step in the right direction or if it's a one game anomaly. I mean, we'll find out because the Eagles have some of the best pass rushers in the NFL coming up this week. But I think at least for this game, you want to, you know, acknowledge that he did a very nice job.
And for me, one of the other things I liked in this, I've been talking about the past couple of weeks, is the play of Jerron Brown. And we always have to remember how we're basically a year out from where he had his ACL injury. He played 99 snaps on Sunday. That's crazy. But he put together a number two receiver game. The eight catches, over 100 yards, the first time he's done that in his career. Eight catches were a career high. And he was getting catches in big moments. Now, he did have another one of those where the defender knocked it out of his hands, something I would like to see less of happening. But the fact that week one, he was invisible. And then the next 2 weeks, he had some stats, but it wasn't impactful. We might have seen Jerron Brown finally come around. The receiver play I was pleased with. And then the other thing is Andre Ellington. When David Johnson went down, we talked about how important Andre Ellington could be if he stays healthy. And guess what? I think we found he's not running the ball much and reasonably so because the running game's awful. But Andre Ellington is the 2013 Andre Ellington again. And you know, where they lost that element of the passing game to the running back, it is back in. Maybe it's a little bit different, but they don't really have to change much of the offense in the passing game because Ellington is able to. And this is a guy that when we saw it, were not for TJ Logan's injury, we said he was gone. He was done. When they signed Chris Johnson and TJ Logan was there, it was like he was done. There was no way he was making the roster. And he's now probably the most important offensive player on the team. in terms of that. He's not the best one, but in terms of what they need offensively, I think he might be the most important offensive player now.
Right. And that's, I mean, it's incredible to think that at this point and to see what he has done. He's been above what we expected. And that's important. And it's what the Cardinals need at this point, because let's be honest, they don't have a ton of running back talent. Chris Johnson is clearly just a guy at this point. That offensive line doesn't make things easy for anybody. But overall, you can be excited to see Andre Ellington doing a nice job and showing up in the passing game and kind of, you know, he had a couple drops and that was unfortunate, but when you look at it overall, you're happy with the work that he's done and you expect to see a little bit more of Ellington featured as the season goes along.
Well, and one thing interesting, he put up and he had 9 catches for 86 yards. Imagine if that touchdown doesn't get overturned. It shouldn't have been overturned. And he, you know, doesn't drop one of those. Then you're looking at 11 catches for over 100 yards and a touchdown. That's a notable thing. The other thing I liked was when he talked about it last week, kind of going down the stat sheet, the Cardinals through 3 games had only gotten their hands. They had the 2 interceptions and only nine passes defended, or basically broken up passes where they got their hands on balls. They had 5. So they got another interception, which, you know, Antoine Bethea had the easiest interception in the history of interceptions. 13 ultimately and 14. So they had 5 pass deflections. So they got their hands on 5 other passes on Sunday. Maybe again, we're going to talk about, maybe that was just because Brian Hoyer's not very good, but it was positive to see them getting hands on balls, which they needed. The one guy that I wish had gotten hands on balls more was Tyrann Mathieu. He put up a good statistical game. But I still think he wasn't quite there. So actually, was there anything else that you want to that stands out to you or things that you liked from the game?
I just thought defensively it was a nice effort. Again, it's really hard to gauge overall what happened because the 49ers are so poorly run by Brian Hoyer. But, you know, giving up only 15 points, that's not a bad thing. Giving up only field goals. Again, it was a lot of what we talked about. A lot of bend but don't break.
And which is better than they were doing, which was breaking and not bending.
Yeah.
As what is that? That makes any even sense, but that's what they were doing.
Right. And so, you know, I think you're okay with that and you're happy with what you've seen so far, at least in this week.
Coming up next on Rice to See Red, we're going to talk about what we didn't like from the game. So that's coming up next. We're back on Rise Up, See Red, and we're going to talk about what didn't we like from the game. And there, well, obviously, with what we saw, there was plenty of things not to like as a winless 49ers team really took them to the very, very edge of things. And so you can't really look forward. You can't look at the rest of the season with much optimism. However, winning a tough game, because of the nature of this, it was a division game against a hungry team who's been competitive. They didn't lose that game. And in fact, they haven't lost to a division team since week four of last year when the Rams came to town and beat them when they should have won that game. They are holding the division. They're doing really well in the division. And so that game is an absolute must. You have to win those games no matter what at home in the division. They don't have to be pretty, and they usually aren't. And so there was that was a good thing to see. What didn't I like? I didn't like seeing Carson Palmer continue to get hit after hit and after hit. And there was even one of those plays where Ray Armstrong hits him before he finishes his drop back, and I can't even begin to understand how bad this offensive line is. Because if we talked about this. This offensive line was supposedly better than last year's line, right? That's what we've always, that's what we said all offseason.
Yeah, it was supposed to be. And again, you know, you and I have talked about this off the air. We've talked about it on the air. It's amazing that we've arrived at the same exact place under Bruce Arians and Steve Keim that we were at with Ken Wesenhunt and Rod Graves in terms of the offensive line effectiveness. When you consider the giant difference in investment, I mean, Steve Keim has put his blood, sweat, tears, and most of his money into building this offensive line. And they, and I get that they are beset by injuries at this point, but they're legitimately the worst unit in the league. I mean, I don't know if there's any question about it. And that makes them dangerously, you know, bad, because we've brought it up, Kurt Warner and his retirement, Kevin Cobb and his basically having to retire because of all the hits he took, not even here, but when he tried to go play in Buffalo afterwards. And it's, you don't want to see that from another quarterback. And it feels like at this point, that's where we're headed. So, you know, like I said, Jared Veldheer, you want to acknowledge the game he had, but it was an awful, awful performance by the offensive line. And it's very unsettling that it continues to be an issue for this organization.
And you feel bad for, in part, you know, Mike Iupati says early in the week, 100% he's going to play. Then it turns out he's got a bone spur that's about to cut through his tendon, cut through the triceps. Suddenly Friday, oh, he's done. He's done for maybe the season, most of the season. And so they end up shifting Will Holden over guard. And what I was at the press conference on Monday with Bruce Arians, and I found it incredibly amusing what he said. You know, Holden practiced all week at tackle, then started at guard and looked like it. I'm like,
he was, and that's, and I said that, and you tweeted that out, and I kind of quote tweeted and said he had numerous good passing sets against DeForest Buckner, who's probably a top five interior pass rusher in the NFL already in only his second year. I mean, he is young Calais Campbell. And he might, and he's got a little more juice than Calais had in terms of pure athletic ability at that size. And there were times when Holden held his own. Now, that was maybe 40% of the time. So the other 60% of the time he was getting his butt kicked. But I think that was a better ratio than what I expected when it comes to Will Holden versus DeForest Buckner. And again, it goes back to, I wouldn't necessarily blame Holden for that. He was put in a completely impossible situation to be successful, and he failed. And so it's not, you know, it's not something that we should be surprised of. And the fact that, you know, he kept at it the whole game was impressive. I think the other thing that you have to be discouraged would probably be the correct word, is that you're at home and you have that many defensive penalties extending drives for the San Francisco 49ers. I think we had, we saw two offsides penalties. We had multiple defensive back penalties, whether they were pass interference, holding, illegal contact, any of the above. And that's just, that's what the difference is between the Cardinals being a good defense and a great defense, is getting off the field when they have the opportunity to. And, you know, a quarterback better than Brian Hoyer, and we've seen it, Dak Prescott and Matt Stafford, you give them extra chances, you don't finish sacks. You know, Marcus Golden and Chandler Jones against against both Prescott and Stafford, and in this case you allow them to extend drives with penalties, you're going to pay most of the time. Thank goodness it was Brian Hoyer. They didn't pay as much as they could have. So,
and for me, the other thing that I really just couldn't get over is that, and it ties into the offensive line, but they are just so atrocious at running the ball. It is embarrassing just how bad they are at running the ball. Now, in fairness, I mean, the numbers could have been much better because Evan Bain, and maybe, you know, I had to go back and look at the tape. You know, Chris Johnson, 32 yards, 2.5 yards per carry. Andre Ellington at 3.6, but as a team, they averaged 2.3. That was coming off of a, you know, entering that game, they averaged 2.8. The running game is just impossibly bad, and it's made worse that when they get a good run, they get flagged for holding. It was, you know, Evan Bain got flagged for 3 holding penalties, and by the way, he has not been good. He's been really not good at right guard so far this season, but at least 2 of those 3 penalties negated solid runs. Now, maybe they were solid runs in part because he was holding, but it's just, even like anytime they get anything positive in the running game, it gets erased.
Yeah. And it's unfortunate, and it's been, you know, it's been a continual problem for this team, and how does it get fixed? That's kind of the question at this point. And I don't know if it can. I mean, I don't know if it can this season is what I mean. You know, you can be hopeful that a healthy DJ Humphreys, who's not playing again this week, you know, I guess John Wetzel at left guard, or maybe Alex Boone when everybody's healthy. Like, that's the problem too, is you don't even know when you're going to get everybody back, because it's just kind of a cluster right now. And so when you look at it in that sense, it's bad. And I don't think this year we're going to see, I mean, you assume you're going to get some improvement eventually, right? Like eventually you're going to get some improvement, but so far.
And they did last year, because remember the line was terrible. And then the second half of the season, suddenly, you know, after people were getting hurt, they were okay. And that was the weird part. They were okay.
Yeah. It was like the opposite of what you expected. So,
right. The other thing for me that you have to look at and just really frown at is the Cardinals' inability to be effective on third down, 5 of 16. Now they held San Francisco to 5 of 19 on third down, but the Cardinals were 5 of 16, and it's just the element that they can't finish those drives because they get stuck. And it comes into pass protect. It comes to how the offensive line play, but they just aren't. They can't afford to not score points on drives. They have to do better. I mean, they were in the first half, they were 2 of 8. So they look at the game. So the first half they were 2 of 8. The rest of the game they were 3 of 8. That's not. Oh, wait, hold on. No, it got worse. It got worse. They were 3 of 8 in the first half, which means they were 2 of 8 in the second half. That's, their offense is supposed to be good. That's,
the offensive line just doesn't allow it to. And you're continually playing, in theory, from behind. You're continually playing from 1st and 10 to 2nd and 9, maybe 2nd and 8. You're continually trying to, you know, make up those things. And so you're seeing, you know, I've seen a lot of tweets about Carson Palmer being 2nd or 3rd in the NFL in passing yards. And it's like, yeah,
that's the only way that they're gaining any yards at all.
Yeah. That's the only offense they have. Like, their entire offense is based on passing the football at this point. Like, they're literally the worst rushing offense in the NFL. So what are they going to do? They don't really have an alternative at this point. So, you know, I just think, you're hopeful that health and continuity is going to carry you to at least a passable, passable semblance of running game and take some of the pressure off of Carson Palmer, because that's the thing that, when you look at it, that's the thing that jumps out to me, is that nobody in the NFL has attempted more passes than Carson Palmer this year. That's kind of the opposite of what you're wanting in this. The next closest guy, I'm double checking my numbers here. So Palmer's thrown 183 times. The next closest is Eli Manning at 166. So 17 less passes in the same amount of games. That's that, like, Palmer's on pace. He's on pace to throw the ball over, oh, wrong button. Let me, I'm getting the numbers here. Yeah, he's throwing the ball 46 times a game. He's on pace to throw the ball over 700 times this year. Like, that's...
And that is far the most he's... His highest passing attempts in his career was last season at 597.
Well, and the craziest thing is those are actual attempts. So that doesn't even count the 17 sacks. So, and you know, he's also scrambled a couple times. I know he's not big on scrambling, but so you're talking about he's already dropped back over 200 times on the season. That's completely absurd through four games. That means they're trying to throw the ball 50 times a game. So, but again, it goes back to they literally have no other choice. There's no other offensive options.
They can't do anything. And you look at, in 2015, Palmer was sacked a total of 25 times in the 16 games that he played. 25 times. That is incredible.
Well, and I was dumb enough. That was one of my bold predictions this year coming into the season. And obviously losing David Johnson plays a huge part in this. But, you know, I thought he would only get sacked, or I said he would get sacked less than 25 times this year. Because I thought they would be able to
in
run
four games.
Yeah. I thought they would be able to run the ball better. I thought they would take some of the pressure off Palmer, and it's instead been the 100% exact opposite.
Oh, jeez. That's enough. I can't do more with that. So coming up next on Rise of Sea Red, we're gonna play a little something called I Believe That. So that's coming up next on Rise of Sea Red. We're back on Rise Up Sea Red. It's time to do some fill in the blank, and this is something we're gonna do with a few of the concepts. We're gonna say, I believe that, and we're gonna talk about different things. So we're gonna first let's talk about the NFC West. I believe that the NFC, what, Seth?
The NFC West.
The NFC West.
The NFC West is still not good. I don't care what Seattle did last week. They were at home against Jacoby Brissett and tied at halftime. Yes, they won by 24 points, but we know how that defense gets going downhill. They lost their best running back, and I still don't buy them. And the LA Rams are where the Cardinals were when Arians came in. Like, you're still skeptical, right? Like, you still want to see it consecutively and see it happen. So,
I believe that the NFC West is beginning to change. Not that I completely believe in the Rams yet, but they're at least interesting. And you see just how terrible was Jeff Fisher, because Sean McVay comes in and Jared Goff looked like garbage last year. And this year looks like he's the answer. I mean, he's making he's in a system that allows him to make money throws that he's doing. Todd Gurley looks like this year's David Johnson. So the NFC, I believe that the NFC West is changing, but it's still bad this year because I don't, you know, their defense, the Rams defense it's not good yet. We saw some good, but they're giving up points. They give up 39 to the 49ers, you know, 30 to the Cowboys. They didn't look good against Washington that week one. So there's still a lot of improvement, but I believe that the NFC West is wide open. And because even as bad as the Cardinals have looked, that means they're in it and very well are in position to be able to win this division. Obviously they have to play better, but because they got that win, the season isn't over. They're buying time. As long as they're winning those division games and you know, staying around 500 until David Johnson can come back, they should, if they can do that, put themselves in position for the postseason.
Yeah, and I'm with you, and that's, you know, one of the reasons or one of the facts that this division I think is bad means that a bad team at this juncture, like the Cardinals and the Seahawks for the same measure, are completely control their own destiny. Like, there's no denying that the Cardinals look worse than the Seahawks, but they can get healthy and on a run just as quick.
Next one. I believe that Carson Palmer, what, Seth?
I believe that Carson Palmer will somehow miraculously make it through all 16 games. And then he's going to retire and seek workman's comp.
And I believe that Carson Palmer will ultimately take some serious hit. He'll get hurt this year. I believe that Carson Palmer will get injured this season and that he will retire. I don't think at the rate things are going, there isn't a chance in anything that he comes back in 2018. After all, you know, what was the decision about coming back? It was about whether his body would react and recover. I don't see that happening. Dating back to his days in Cincinnati, his protection, his body was the issue. He's 38 years old, going to be 38 or whatever, and he's getting hit more. I believe that by the end of the year, if this is the pace, that we're going to be watching Drew Stanton or Blaine Gabbert starting games.
And that's just smart business by you, because it's not that he's injury prone. It's not we're not saying anything like that. What you're saying is it is unlikely that somebody can take this type of punishment and survive the entire time.
Especially at his age. I mean, you look at what the record is, 78, I think, 78 sacks in a season, a quarterback. And that was David Carr, and he was a rookie. So he was built big to begin with, but he was a rookie and he was young. Carson Palmer's got the body frame, but he's old, and he's tough. He's tough, but you can't expect him to, he's on pace for 68 to get sacked 68 times. We all know that's not going to really happen because he'll be hurt before that happens, and that'll save it from happening, unfortunately.
Yeah, and
but he'll be good. I mean, he's doing well, and I mean, that's surprising because he looked washed up to start the year, and he doesn't look washed up anymore.
Right, and that's the silver lining of this all, is that he doesn't look. I think that's where the Kurt Warner comparison comes in, is that they still look like they can do it, but I mean, do we really want to ask them to? It's kind of selfish at this point.
Next one. I believe that the offensive line what?
The offensive line has to get better. Like, there's, you cannot tell me that this offensive line is going to be this bad for 12 more games. There's just 0% chance, because if it happens, it will be categorically the biggest disaster of the Kime and Arians era. And at that point, that's when difficult questions begin to get asked, because you can't put your quarterback in a position to get sacked on pace for almost, you know, over 65 sacks this year. You can't put him in that position. And then you can't put him in the position to take the number of hits that he is on pace to take this year. Plus, you have to have a running game. Like, eventually you have to run the football. You cannot throw the ball over 700 times in a season. It just, it's not, you can't.
His arm will fall off.
Yeah, not just that. You can't ask the guy to drop back over 800 times in the season. That's what they're on pace for. Like, it's, the offensive line has to get better, and it has to, they have to figure out a way to take the pressure off of Palmer.
And I believe that the offensive line will weather early injuries and eventually come together. I do worry a little bit about DJ Humphreys, not about ability, but about durability, being that he's already missed he keeps missing games. He had the concussion. He has the knee sprain. It was re-aggravated. So it's going to take a miracle, as Bruce Arians said on SiriusXM radio on Tuesday. It'll take a miracle for him to play. So it'll be John Wetzel again. Alex Boone might come back, but the fact that they signed Earl Watford makes me think that he probably might be the starter this week. So we're going to see a fourth starting left guard already this season. But you can't, at some point, things have to even out. So they're suffering all their injuries now, which means, right, if you're talking about the rules of football, they're going to stay healthy later in the year, ideally. And if that happens, you get Humphreys back at left tackle. You've got Boone at left guard, who really played pretty solidly in the two games he was in there. Jared Beldier appears to look better. Evan Bates got to get better, you think. And if not, I mean,
well, and maybe that's what Watford, that was my question, is if
Boone, that's a very good point.
If Boone is as close as they say now, of course they said last week that we could see Upati and Humphreys back this week, and we know
the fact is they thought Upati was going to play until Friday, and then that was bad news.
And so you look at it from that perspective, maybe that's what Watford was brought in for, was to play right guard. So that's just a speculation. I have no idea, but
that's a good one. I didn't even think of that, actually. In all the, like, maybe it's because of Bane. Maybe it is, because he played right guard before. He wasn't great, but he was better than Bane has been. What do you believe about the defense? So I believe that the defense, what?
I believe that the defense is close to breaking out. They've had a couple really good games. They've had games where they've played well early and faded late. I think they're getting close to one of those games where they just completely take over and change the kind of the fate of the game. And not to jinx it, but I think it's going to happen in 2 weeks against Tampa Bay. I don't see this team doing that on the road, but I do see them doing it at home, feeding off the crowd, especially against a quarterback in Jameis Winston, who's prone to forcing the ball into bad spots.
And that makes sense. That makes sense, considering, you know, they went from, they've had bad fourth quarters. They kind of shored that up last week. They were getting hands on more balls. The young defensive line, now this I didn't catch during the game, and Bruce Arians told us about this on Monday, you know, he gave game balls to Rodney Gunter, Xavier Williams, and Olson Pierre. And I didn't realize just how productive. He said that for the immense production that they got in a limited amount of time, let me pull up the numbers. They played a combined 59 snaps, I think, between the three of them. They combined for 11 tackles, 2 for a loss, and a sack and a half, and also another QB hit. So that, you know, if you're looking at the production that they lost with Calais Campbell, that was a Calais Campbell game. So there were, what, 79 defensive snaps, or maybe 76 or something, maybe, or 80 something. There were a lot of snaps. 59 of them, 11 tackles, 2 for losses, a sack and a half, a forced fumble. No, that wasn't them. That was the forced fumble didn't come from them. And but they were. That is exactly what you want to see. So, I believe that the defense will get even better with the development of those young. And that was without Robert Kimdichie. Imagine if you add in Kimdichie to that, and maybe actually it won't ever happen, because I don't know if you'll ever see all four of those guys playing in a game. But I believe that the defense on the defensive line is going to improve, which will allow the secondary to make more plays.
Yeah, and I expect the same thing. And you hope that eventually you get Kimdichie back. You hope, who knows when, but you hope that you get him back soon and he's able to, you know, increase that pressure. Because Olson Pierre had a nice game. Frosty Rucker is their best interior pressure guy now. Corey Peters is their best defensive lineman, but Frosty Rucker has been like the only guy to be able to generate consistent pressures. So now to see Pierre come in and Gunter have a nice game, you know, that's encouraging.
And the last one, and this is referring to the situation outside linebacker, Marcus Golden now done for the season. They're down to 2 offensive outside linebackers with Chandler Jones and Kareem Martin. Kareem Martin will get the start now. And it appears that they're going to go with Hassan Reddick as their third guy and maybe mix in a little bit of Josh Morrow, maybe. Because the roster moves that they made did not add an outside linebacker. They added Earl Watford. Then they brought up Scooby Wright, which tells you, oh, that's more inside linebacker depth, and it looks like that Hassan will be going outside full time. So I believe that the outside linebacker position, what?
I'm really interested to see what happens with this, because I don't know if it's a strength anymore. You went from a team where, I mean, because here's the thing, Kareem Martin's played 27 defensive snaps this year. That's it. Like, there was no rotating him in, you know, keeping Golden and Joe. No, those guys are playing, you know, Golden or Jones had played just under 98% of the snaps. Golden is over 80, or, you know, was over 85% of the snaps before the injury. Those guys weren't getting rotated out for Kareem Martin. So now I don't think that this is a strength anymore, but it sure as heck is a good opportunity for Kareem Martin to prove a lot of people wrong and to earn himself maybe a contract extension with the Cardinals, but definitely a contract opportunity with another team.
And I believe that the outside linebacker position is precarious at best. Although, give us after the bye, and I bet we're going to see a lot of Hassan Reddick and maybe an impact that we did not expect him to have, playing more outside than inside, especially when they got Buchanan back. Buchanan was essentially Kevin Minter because they used him in base, and then they used Reddick and for nickel. But looks like they will increase his workload. Reddick will play more outside linebacker. And I believe, you know, based on what we're seeing, by the time the bye comes around, Hassan Reddick will be playing more than Kareem Martin. I think he'll end up having that sort of an impact once he is used to playing there and getting changed positions again.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think in the end, that's who it'll be. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. I mean, it was a good thing that they overall invested in a guy with his versatility. Because, I mean, even think about it. No matter how good Reuben Foster is or becomes or anything of that nature, he couldn't have shifted to outside linebacker in this situation. Now, that's assuming, again, that Reddick does a good job, but I think it's safe to assume that he'll be able to provide maybe not as much as what Golden did, because Golden was a difference maker in the way his motor worked, but he'll be able to provide similar statistical outcomes, I think, in terms of pass rush productivity and things of that nature.
We'll wrap up that segment on this segment on what we believe of this section of Rise Up Saber, and we'll come back for the last part. We're going to talk about the Philadelphia Eagles, the challenge they pose, the challenge the Cardinals face this week. So that's coming up on the last part of Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on Rise Up Sea Red. We're talking about the Philadelphia Eagles. Cardinals on the road, 10 a.m. game in Philadelphia against the Eagles, who are 3-1. They are as much as a 7-point underdog to start the week. Do the Cardinals have any chance?
I mean, it's the NFL. You always have a chance. But no, I mean, 10% maybe. This is a game, and we're not at this point with this team, so don't take it this way, but this is a game where you at least want to see them stay close. You want to see them in a position, you know, probably more closely resembling the Dallas game than the Detroit game. But I mean, if you saw either of those, I think you might, you know, you're not going to consider it a win, and there's no moral victories, especially in year five of a regime. But going through what they've gone through, the depleted front offensive line, the lack of offensive versatility that they possess at this point, it's going to take a Herculean effort from Carson Palmer and the Cardinals defense in order to see them win this game.
And, you know, you look at the personnel that they have offensively. Jason Peters is no chump at left tackle, so Chandler Jones will have his hands full with, and Peters. They have a young quarterback in Carson Wentz. Now, the passing game, if you're looking at the passing game, I think the Cardinals can keep them under wraps with the receivers that they have. You have to worry about Zach Ertz, a tight end. That's a tough matchup. It'll be interesting to see what with the running game, because of the type of runner that Garrett Blunt is. He is very difficult to defend, and he's exactly the type of runner that if the Cardinals don't get a lead, that he will wear them down and really make things look bad. The defensive side of the ball, and you've got an Eagles team who has 10 sacks, and the production's coming across the board. So you've got Chris Long, who's coming off the bench with 2 sacks. You get 2 sacks. You got Fletcher Cox. Bo Allen's got a 1. Brandon Graham off the edge at 2.5. Timmy Jernigan from the inside with 1.5. You've got Michael Kendricks, you know, playing in space there at linebacker with a sack as well. And you look at that, and you know, you think if Carson Palmer can get time, then you can do something against their their corners, but they got solid safeties. So you have to, like, you have to worry about this game a lot. And it's so hard to say that they're going to just, they're going to win, because they haven't been above 500 in forever, since the end of 2015. They haven't been over 500. And you need them to hang around, but this is another NFC game. They're already 1-2 in the division, in the conference. You don't want them dropping to 1-3. Now, granted, they get Tampa Bay at home. We think they're going to win that one, but they need something. But this game just looks very difficult. I mean, this is a matchup that's going to be very difficult for them.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. And it's tough to see them overcoming those odds on the road against a good team when it took overtime.
Everything they got.
Against a bad team on the road and against a bad team at home. So that's why I said, again, you're not looking for moral victories, but you're just looking for encouragement of improving. Like, if they go in and get blown out, it's really going to be hard to spin this as a team that could possibly make the playoffs. But if they go in and compete, if they put up a game similar to what, you know, Washington did against Kansas City the other night, and they lose late or in the fourth quarter, I think you're okay. You're not okay with it, but I think you're able to understand it overall.
Right. And because road games on the East Coast are really tough. And we've already seen East Coast games are really difficult for the Cardinals. They come out sleepy. And this is, you know, with the two good games that Carson Palmer's had, this is the one that has me a little bit worried. Since he's reverting back a little bit. Carson, before 2015, was a two good game, one bad game kind of quarterback. Ooh. And against the front with Fletcher Cox and Brandon Graham and Timmy Jernigan, this could be one of those games. As long and if he can just not have a bad game turnover wise and just be erratic, I think the Cardinals can keep it close. I think their defense will be good. And that way it's another grinded out loss or grinded out masterful win. Because I think Carson Palmer is going to struggle in this one. The offensive line's not going to get any better, unfortunately. And so they're just going to – Carson Palmer's going to have to do what he's been doing. I don't think he can do it on the road in an early game, especially with the interior pressure. That's the part that worries me the most. They're going to be getting interior pressure by Jernigan and Cox. You get okay tackle play, but decent up front. Palmer can avoid the edge rush. He can't avoid the pressure up the middle.
No, he can't. And, you know, he's doing a better job of stepping up and stepping out of the pocket, but he's not, like you said, he's not going to be a guy that's able to evade interior pressure. So it's either going to have to come from, and it's something I saw in the game, and I don't want to get too into X's and O's, but something I saw in the game that I didn't see enough of, and that was that they had the ability, it seemed like a lot, where Fitz was in the slot and they were playing 7 to 10 yards off, and you feel like they could just force them to bring that guy up by running that little smoke route and throwing the ball to Fitz. And then just, you know, if he only gains 3 yards, well,
that's better than your running game.
I was going to say, there's no way you're getting that in the running game. So at least it's 3 yards. So that was my, you know, that's just one thing I noticed. But yeah, overall, when you look at it, it's just, the offensive line has to all of a sudden, health isn't even an option. So they just have to play better. The guys that are out there have to play better. They have to give Carson Palmer a chance, and you know, let's just hope he's healthy.
Yeah. And, you know, the Cardinals are 7-point underdogs. They're 0-4 against the spread so far. And it pains me to pick the Cardinals to lose this one. But I think this is going to be a 10-point game that the Cardinals lose that's actually closer than it looks. It'll end up being some late touchdown when they turn the ball over on downs late in the game. But I think the Cardinals lose this game between 7 and 10 points.
Yeah, I think it's going to end up being something like 24 to, you know, hopefully 14, and it's hopefully not 12. Because they, yeah. not because Phil Dawson missed extra points, but because they couldn't score anymore again. So, yeah,
all right.
Something like that. So I'm with you. I think in the end it's going to be a loss, but I hope we can take some positives out of it.
And that'll wrap up this edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. You can find us on iTunes. You can find us on Stitcher Radio, on TuneIn Radio, on RevengeOfTheBirds.com, on Blog Talk Radio, on Audio Boom, and also on CardsWire. Hopefully we're talking about a 3-2 Cardinals team. We know for certain, unless some tragic injury happens, we will not be eulogizing the season yet next week. So on behalf of Seth Cox, I'm Jess Root. This is the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Go Cardinals and Rise Up Sea Red.